This episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club is brought to you by our Patreon members of the Trophy Talk Network. Your support really means a lot to us, so a special thank you shout out to Super Hans, Jordan Vickers, Against Me, First Mage, Diego Juan, KingK6969, Gary Cooper, and Pat the Trophy Hunter. If you're interested in supporting this show, as well as the other Trophy Talk Network shows, like the Trophy Talk Podcast, the MoogleCast, and Surviving the Horror, go to patreon.com/trophytalknetwork. And for now, enjoy the show. What's up, internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I am your host, Kevin Garaventa, aka the Portland Kevin, and like a book club, we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus Extra Library and talk about it way too much. This time we are talking about Cult of the Lamb. This cozy-looking horror-themed game was developed by Massive Monster and published by Devolver Digital in August of 2022 on all current platforms. The seemingly cute game holds some very dark themes, where you play as a cartoon lamb crusading through dungeons and building a cult with the rewards and followers you collect along the way. And here to talk about it is one of my fellow hosts in the Trophy Talk Network, Zach Ellery. How you doing, sir?
Yeah, good morning, Kevin, and hello to all the lovely listeners. I'm hoping people aren't getting sick of my voice just yet. But yeah, this game was a lot of fun to play.
I don't think that's possible. I don't think we can get sick of your voice at all. But you originally, way back in March, when we started voting, we had the Discord vote on what game we were going to play. Actually, that was January, come to think of it, when we did our first vote. Cult of the Lamb was on that list, and you suggested we put it on there. It was one of the three that tied for what we were going to be talking about, and then back in April, you suggested we put it back on the list for the vote for the June game. What made you want to play this game?
I guess it just looked quite really polished. I mean, I've seen it come up, you know, in sales and on the PlayStation Store, and I guess it just kind of, and on the obviously on the PlayStation Plus service, and it kind of was one of those games that always catches your eye. I don't know what it is about it, but I always saw it and thought, yeah, I like roguelike games, community builders are pretty fun. It could be something that I want to play. So yeah, I just thought, yeah, what a good excuse to play it.
Yeah, of course. Like this would be a great chance to. It was one that was always on my radar, but I never planned to like actually start playing it. I was always just slightly curious about it, but it never quite got my attention enough to actually download it and start it. But before we jump into that, you're from the MoogleCast here on the Trophy Talk Network. Give us a quick heads up of what's happening there lately.
Yeah, so if people don't know, MoogleCast is mine and Max's show, and we try to cover like a wide variety of topics and just try to have a good time chatting about all things video games. Last month, we covered overlooked games in series for us and our backlog plans for the remainder of the year. So check that one out. And this month coming up will be something a little bit special because Max is unable to make it. So it'll be me hosting with Colin from the Trophy Talk main show coming on the show. And we're going to be talking about Xbox. So stay tuned for that.
Just all things Xbox in general?
Yeah, I think we'll probably specify a bit more. But at the moment, it's just kind of a lot of Xbox stuff. And we'll kind of taper in from there as we get closer to the time.
Cool, cool. And I do know that I think next weekend, at least as of the time of this recording, but the weekend that this episode is going to be coming out is when Xbox is going to be having a big showcase. So you guys are probably going to have a lot to talk about.
Exactly right.
In terms of like what's coming up for them. That's very exciting. But it's great to have you here. I'm glad you picked Cult of the Lamb. So let's dive into it. Before we do, though, we do like to have a Trophy Talk Platinum shout-outs for anyone that played along with this game, but I actually did dive into the spreadsheet that you manage, which is, it's an amazing project that you have where you've cataloged all the games that everyone in the Discord server has been playing. And I checked that. According to the record, which is what the spreadsheet's called, no one has been playing Cult of the Lamb in our Discord. Mm. Mm-hmm. Even though when we held the vote back in April, three people voted for it. And that was the majority at the time. And so, you know, if you want to be part of the voting process, you can jump into our Discord and also subscribe to our Patreon. So that would give you the chance to vote on a game like Cult of the Lamb. But the shocking thing is that nobody played it, even though they voted for it. So I know that Fate Prime was trying to platinum this before the recording session today. Soft shout out to you, Fate Prime, for at least trying to make it. But you know, it's surprising that I guess that like just a few people just really were curious and wanted to hear us talk about the game rather than play it, which it's interesting. And it's a different perspective that they're going to have. I'm kind of envious because I had to play through this game, but we'll get to my reasons behind that. Anyway,
yeah, I would say for Fate Prime, he would have had the platinum if it had the base game requirements, but because of the DLC, it does change those, and we can get into that later. But yeah, it means
absolutely,
he would have had the platinum, but he's unfortunately just a bit short because of the requirements change.
Yeah, so close, but you get like a tip of the hat for going for it. I'll say that. Getting into the specifics about Cult of the Lamb, this is a game that I would kind of categorize as like a cozy game in a sense where it's cute and you manage sort of like a plot of land and a community, kind of like Farmville, but Stardew Valley. And I felt like this is the best explanation for this is like if you took the two games Stardew Valley and The Binding of Isaac and blended them together, you'd get this game.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it together. Yeah.
Yeah. What was your first impression of this game?
Yeah. It was very cutesy. Like that's exactly how I'd put it. The art style was very, you know, fun and light and everything was kind of soft to look at, but it also, I don't know, it had quite vibrant colors. They did a lot of things with imagery, like symbols, but not, you know, not heavily dark symbols, just interesting to look at, and every kind of part of the game was a really interesting thing to look at, and so it just kind of caught my eye.
It has that art style that is very cute. It is very much a like a chibi kind of art style where everything is really adorable looking and has big eyes and is hand-drawn, or at least looks like it's hand-drawn, and it's all the game itself is in three dimensions, but everything is like formed as a two-dimensional shape. Yeah. So it looks like a pop-up book that is animated.
Yeah. I like that art style a lot.
Yeah. Like it is very striking art style. Then that's like a quick breakdown of the presentation, but the gameplay itself has you doing like two different main things. The first is there's like a bunch of dungeons for you to go through. They are randomly generated just like any other roguelite kind of game. But you pick up weapons along the way and you kill a bunch of monsters that are there or cultists from other cults. And then you sometimes try to rescue people that are imprisoned by any of these monsters, or sometimes there are monsters themselves that then surrender to you and you can recruit them into your cult. and you gather up all these resources that you collect throughout the dungeons and bring them back to your plot of land and start and use them to build up your own cult in this area. And you kind of have this very cute style with a very dark subject matter for it. And that's an interesting contrast that I occasionally see in games that try to tackle some more mature things. This particular game, though, doesn't really take a mature attitude toward cults and like the more dangerous side of like religion. Instead, it just tries to be cute all the way and is also very mischievous. So of the two styles, which did you enjoy more?
For me, I'd probably say the dungeon crawling aspect. Like, when I looked at this game, that was the side that definitely pulled me in more, because I'm a big fan of roguelites and likes. But yeah, when I was playing it, the dungeon crawling part, it felt really smooth. The combat in the game is like really clean. The animations were quick and responsive, and I felt like whenever I was taking damage, it was due to a mistake of my own, which I really enjoy, instead of like a gameplay issue, which some games have.
Mm-hmm.
There were sometimes a lot of projectiles on the screen or enemies diving at you, and you were able to be quite reactive and dodge things, as opposed to getting frustrated due to a limitation in the game. But I did enjoy the community builder part, and like you said, it was quite playful, even with things like sacrificing or, you know, all these different things. It was really, it put a fun spin on it. But I feel like there were definitely, and I'm not sure if it was maybe too easy, but parts of the community builder, it didn't really feel like there's a lot of punishment. Like, there were, if you went away in the dungeons, which I did a lot, especially at the start of the game, I went for one or two dungeons in a row sometimes, just because I was feeling like playing it. And then I'd come back and it would be, oh, your faith is in the floor, but then it would be so easy to get that back up. In other games that have community builders, you can have some bad thing happen and it can get quite out of hand, and you kind of like, you have to maintain the balance. But in this one, if there was no food or if there was no faith or if there was a bunch of sickness, it was really easy to fix it. So I felt like it kind of took a bit of the difficulty away for me, and then it would be a quick touch up and then back out to the dungeon for me. But I did enjoy both aspects. But yeah, the dungeon part to me just felt a bit more what I was looking for.
Yeah. What difficulty level were you playing it on?
Just the regular one, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because when you start, it says that, like, here's the developer recommended difficulty level, and it's just medium. And you can turn it down to easy or you can turn it up to hard. And I agree with you. Like, it felt like, at least at first, there wasn't really that big of a consequence to like jumping into one of these dungeons and going on what they refer to as a crusade through the dungeon. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big deal until, for me at least, the first time I got killed in one of the dungeons. And then I came back, and yes, my cult's faith was in the floor, and I had a couple of cult members that were dissenting and preaching against me in the cult. Mm-hmm. I got to a point, and at that time I also didn't have a prison built in my camp, so I couldn't in any way stop this one guy from dissenting. And then he would walk around to the cult and start preaching to other people to convert them away from mine. And I eventually just figured out, oh, if I could talk to him, right, and get him back on my side, but that only does so much. It decreases that meter that builds up in his dissenting level. And his dissension level was increasing faster than I could reduce it. And I ended up just taking the entire cult into the chapel that you build to like hold all of your ceremonies and stuff. And I had a ritual sacrifice and just sacrificed him to the gods. And got him out of the cult that way.
Yep. That sounds like a pretty effective way of getting rid of him.
Yeah. But like the dungeon crawling side of the game is just one half of it. And I did really much enjoy this side of it too. I felt like it was very easy. until I killed the first of the four big bosses. And after that one, it's like the difficulty spiked pretty high. And that was when it was like on my second or third attempt for that dungeon, because you have to run through them four times to get to the big boss of them. But it was on that second or third run through the second dungeon, which is the mushroom forest area. That one I ended up getting killed and kicked back out. And that's when I realized that's like the worst thing that can happen to your cult early on, for you to just lose so much faith. So I had a rough time to begin with, but it was because I didn't really know what to build. Yep. And I also I'm not very good at these community management games. Carrie, my wife, she asked me what I thought of this after a couple hours. And I just said to her, this isn't my kind of game, but I understand what does make this pretty good. So I ended up did end up having a lot of fun with it after a while though. And, I did enjoy the dungeon crawler aspect of it, especially when, you start to unlock different outfits or fleeces as they're called in the game, but these different outfits will, give you certain new abilities. And the one that I got and stuck with as soon as I learned about it was the one that increases your damage the more you kill enemies without taking damage.
Yeah.
And that one is the Golden Fleece. And that was one of my favorites. As far as weapons go, anytime I had access to the Barbarian Axe, the big, I think it was called the Meat Cleaver or whatever it was, I went for that one. I felt like the dagger, even though it was fast, it was just way too short. And I would keep getting hit while I was trying to get close enough to enemies to hit them. And then the sword, it was okay. Like, it was a good starting thing to have. But the axe was really my favorite. I did feel like it didn't swing too slow as compared to the other weapons. But the Bane Hammer, that thing was way too slow for my taste. I often got hit by enemies while I was on the wind-up process. So throughout the whole game, though, the axe was my favorite. I didn't see the blunderbuss, the one projectile gun that you have in the game until the third set of dungeons. So I saw that in a list of weapons, and I was like, why haven't I seen this thing, the blunderbuss? Where is this thing? And I don't know if it was an unlockable that you had to get later, but when I got that thing, I realized this one's really good too. So it was either, by the end, it was either the axe or the blunderbuss that I was really going for. What were some of your favorite weapons? What was your favorite fleece to use? Give me all the details.
Yeah, so the fleece ones, for the most part, I just used the standard one. I did use the one you were talking about when I unlocked it, and I think I stick with that to the end of the game. So the golden one was definitely the one I chose as well. In terms of weapons, I have a lot of the same feelings. I mean, the dagger, I think the secondary attack on the dagger, which made the daggers fall from the sky, that was quite strong, and it could hit multiple, if it was a big enemy like a boss, it could hit it multiple times per cast.
Yeah.
And so you could do quite a lot of damage, but the attack itself was not worth the time it took to attack. And so quite quickly I stopped using a dagger if I could. I did use the claws for quite a bit at the start because they seemed to have a lot of damage when you could do the three attacks. You'd do that slam attack, which would do quite a lot of damage. But yeah, it just kind of, whenever I found a bigger weapon, I used it. And it turns out that my favorites actually was the hammer by far. I liked the hammers the most.
I
think the axes were strong, but the hammers, I had the really powerful normal attack, and it was slow. But you could front load the animation before the people got to you, and by the time they got to you, just hit them, and it had a massive hit, AoE, and it would even hit people outside the little circle on the ground. It had a little bit extra than that, and so I could spend less overall time attacking and more time positioning to avoid enemy attacks. So I found it quite useful.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed pairing it up with the critical hit variant of the weapon. It was the merciless hammer. Yeah. And so you'd do one big hit and sometimes it would insta-kill things, or it would do like a massive amount of damage to whatever I was attacking.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I loved about both the hammer and the axe was how much base damage it would do, because then if you got a combo off enough for with that golden fleece, you could build up your additional percentage of damage like up to like 100% or sometimes 200 or 300%, because every enemy you kill is 5%. So if you can kill like, I don't know, 60 enemies in a row without getting touched, then you're doing really well. And mm-hmm. it gets easier and easier to kill enemies. So it sort of snowballs as long as you can keep that combo going. With both the hammer and the axe, that base damage is a lot higher. And so you feel unstoppable when you've got the hammer and you've got like 300% extra damage going. So, that golden fleece, I felt like it was key to a lot of my victories in those dungeons. And then like that secondary attack that you were talking about, the dagger one was really cool. And I loved the secondary attack on the axe, because you could throw the axe and mm-hmm. it would boomerang back to you. So you could often hit enemies twice. And that was great. These like special secondary attacks that all the weapons have are attacks that use up like a meter that you have in the corner. And that is not only used for your special attack with the weapon, but you also collect what are called curses, but they're like magic spells that you can use throughout the dungeon too. And these are usually projectiles that you can use, but also they're sometimes like, you know, just a blast that will push out a ring of damage around you, or they'll do different things, like they'll poison enemies, or they will freeze enemies in place. And mm-hmm. There's even one that gives you invulnerability for a few seconds. And those were very important to some of my later runs. The only problem is that I was often forgetting that I even had them. So that's one thing that makes me terrible at roguelike kind of games, where I forget that I have a lot of the abilities that I should be using. Mm-hmm. So after a while though, like in a boss room, what I would do is I would spam the magic as much as I could. And that would like freeze a boss in place and allow me to hit them like four times with the hammer if I had it, or with the axe. And one other, like there are a lot of other things that you can get throughout these dungeons that will help you out, like tarot cards. And these tarot cards that you unlock will do special things for you, like increase your attack speed. There was one run where I had the hammer and I had forgotten that I got the tarot card that increased the attack speed.
Yeah.
I was originally running around with the dagger because that was the only weapon I could find. And the increase in attack speed was like, it was not noticeable because that attack is already really fast. But the increase was from a rainbow tarot card, which is extremely rare. And this one increased not by like 1.25, which is the normal. The sort of rare version increases by 1.5%. That's good. And this one increased it by not 2%, but two times. So my tarot card read like increase your attack speed by two times whatever your regular one is. So I got that. I was running around with it, forgot that I had it, picked up the Bane Hammer and swung it a couple of times and thought like, why does this feel exactly like the sword? Like this feels super fast. And I can't believe that, like I'm doing base 25 points of damage. And on top of that, I've got already, 250% increase in damage right now. So I can't be stopped. And it's a shame that I'm not going for the main boss of this dungeon. I'm just going for the, like one of the disciples that this guy has. So if only I could have that kind of combination in every run. But that's the beauty of these roguelites, where you've got you know, sometimes you've got incredible luck that will carry you all the way to the end, and you just have to wait for the right moment.
Yeah, I think in a lot of other roguelikes, you do have more choices when it comes to like starting a run. It'll give you multiple weapons and multiple spells that you can choose from. And this one, when you started a run, you just have the one of each, which did make it a bit annoying if you got something you weren't, especially if you're going for like the fourth dungeon where the enemies are a bit tougher and you only get the dagger as an option. You do feel a bit shortchanged, but there would be quite a lot of options to pick up new weapons, usually, although again, sometimes they'd just be the same weapon but stronger. And so I think that was a limiting factor in terms of how much fun you could have with the dungeon. If you were really not fond of a weapon, you might only get offered that one the whole time through it, and so it would make it quite difficult. But
yeah, I'll admit, anytime I started a dungeon and I got a dagger, I was just like, oh, come on, man. Like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, we'll, or even we'll like some of the spells are like really not that great. There's one that it shoots like ichor, like basically like oil, whatever. And that one was quite slow to use. You had to hold the button down and aim it and then let it go, whereas the other ones would just be a direction. And so sometimes you'd get a bad dagger and then that spell, and you're like, do I just reset? I don't know. Like, again, you take the hit.
Well, you take the hit, and then, like, you know, you can't, if you don't have the ability unlocked yet to escape the dungeon, then you have to attempt it. Otherwise, like, you'd get killed through the dungeon, and then your cult loses faith.
Yeah.
Take your stuff back to your cult, and you use those resources to then start building up your cult. You can then use that to then get stronger and go back into the dungeons in a more prepared fashion. Mm-hmm. And the cult like process of doing this and unlocking other things, you get to choose what you unlock, but in this process, when I was given choices, I found myself a lot of the time regretting my choice, especially when it came to unlocking the special ability that you get every time you beat one of the big bishops. So one of those was that I was like, okay, well, I want to start each dungeon with the ability to heal. So they said like, well, you can eat food and that adds more hearts. And so I thought, oh, I could take food with me into the dungeon and that way I can heal some way. But no, that's not how it works. You have to eat the food beforehand, and that gives you extra hearts for the dungeon, which it's like, okay, well, this does kind of work well, but I kind of wish I had chosen the one that let me escape the dungeon if I wasn't having a good time.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Oh, well, like, I'll get that one next time. That's what I kept thinking. Yeah. However, that's enough about the roguelite dungeon side of this, unless you want to talk anything else about it.
No, I'm happy to go to the other side.
Okay. The other side of this, of course, is the community builder, where you build up this cult and you have a bunch of people, you collect devotion and faith from them. Those are like two different meters that help you increase the buildings that are your ability to build new buildings in this plot of land, or increase your power that you take into the dungeons. You have to like befriend people and then like talk to them and praise them for whatever they're doing, like how they're worshiping you as this lamb that is building this cult. Then like you also have to manage food and sleeping quarters for everyone. You have to like go through weird cooking mini games for all of this. You have to like not build recipes for them in the cooking. It's just that like you have to look at the pieces of what you have and craft a meal out of what you've got, and it's very simple, but that's another aspect of this. But this does really much feel like Stardew Valley in a sense. What was your overall impression of the community building aspect of this?
Yeah, like I said before, it definitely on the easier side, which is interesting. I mean, there was, like you were saying, when you're going to craft stuff, there were so many options. But a lot of it, for lack of a better word, was fluff. Like, there was a lot of things that you didn't really need, but there were options there. And they would cost quite a lot. Like, sometimes I'd unlock something thinking it's, oh, that could be useful. I might need that for, you know, this. It might be useful for this instance. And then you go to actually build it, and it costs so much stuff. And I'm like, I don't have the stuff to do that. And so I'm just working with basically the bog standard stuff. And also, for a cult leader who is supposed to be like the leader, the you know, the person barking out all the orders, for most of the community builder aspect, you are doing a lot of the donkey work yourself. Like, you'll have farms that are growing vegetables, and you can plant them, and you can get someone to water them, but you have to pick them until you get someone. Like, the upgrade to get someone to do that stuff for you is way down the line. Actually, I don't know if there is one, but some of the things even the like when people go to the bathroom and you have to build like outhouses and stuff, the options for actually getting that to be kind of self-sustaining is so far through the unlock thing. So you always had to be the person doing stuff, which is fine, but it meant that like it didn't feel like you were building a community. You were building people to do like one job, and then you still had to go and harvest all the things. They wouldn't take the rock from the chest and put it in your stores. They'd just leave it in the chest and it would be full.
Yeah.
Or that kind of thing. So I think it was fun. You could sit there for a while and do stuff. And again, you felt like you had the ability to increase the levels back up if they fell down. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff in that community builder that didn't feel like it was required. I think by the end of the game, I had pretty much the same kind of 8 different types of buildings that I had from the first couple levels, and then just kept them and didn't end up building a lot of the other stuff, which I probably could have, but it didn't really feel like it added much for the amount it cost to make.
Yeah, I felt like there were so many decorations in this game
that
felt so unnecessary. And it was like, oh, you know, I'm not gonna build all of these things. I just want the stuff that helps me get to the end of this game. And yeah, I'm gonna build a couple of decorations when the cult members are asking for it. But
yeah, exactly.
For now, it's like, no, I don't need this. I don't need another fifth variation of this lantern that you can hang outside your outhouses. No. I just need one. And for the fact that a lot of these decorations are so expensive in terms of the materials that you need to build buildings that you actually do need, I didn't find any of them valuable. The only ones that I would often consider building were the ones that were made out of grass, because that was so easy to get.
Yeah, exactly.
I found myself really needing to build out those lumber yards that would just generate wood after a while. And I learned the hard way that wood is one of the earliest resources that you really need to start farming. And those lumber yards really help. But I would often think, I need wood and I don't have any. I've cut down all the trees in my plot of land. Let me go to one of the other locations that has like vendors or quest givers that give you other rewards, and they've got trees. I'm going to cut those down because I'm going to cut down their trees and take the wood. And then after a while, I completely ran out of trees. So then I had to wait a number of days for the trees to grow back. And in that time, my cult members would start to get annoyed that they didn't have shelter for their collapsed beds or something like because yes, the bed, like the sleeping bags that you can build, they can collapse, or they're like lean-tos that you build, they collapse, or the shelters that cult members sleep in, they can collapse too, and that requires wood to repair. and I didn't have any. So I was like, well, I'm sorry, guys. Like, right, like for the next week, everybody's just going to sleep on the ground. Sorry. And they start to lose faith in the cult. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to just bite the bullet now and let people hate me for a little bit while we wait for the trees to grow back so we can get some wood and rebuild the shelters, build a couple of outhouses for everybody. And then we can go on our way. There were a couple of times where I was playing and Carrie was like, so how is this? Like, what, how is it going? And I was like, well, it's going okay. As I walk over to one of the outhouses and clean it out because it's overflowing. So annoying. And then your cult, if you like talk to your cult members, they will say, like, you can read their minds in a sense, but really it's just like knowing like what their most latest reaction is, how they're feeling about where they are.
Yeah.
Sometimes one of them would say something like, yeah, just saw some poop in the garden. Didn't need to see that. Like, wish I didn't have to. It's like, yeah, thanks a lot. That's great. The tone of this game though, in terms of the community builder, it does really try to have some fun with the subject matter and it really takes it lightly. So this is just a disclaimer, but we're saying that like cults are bad, cults are scary and they're dangerous and they're real. So we're not trying to make light of that, but this game definitely does.
Yeah.
And it does do some very funny things. Like when cult members come to you and they give you a quest in a sense, something to do that they want you to do, to then that increases their loyalty to you and their faith. So there were some that were pretty simple, like, hey, we should have this, we should perform this ritual that, would be great for the cult. Let's have a fasting ritual, or let's have the brainwashing ritual. And mm-hmm. those rituals will, yeah. Oh yeah. But they will like prevent your cult's faith from dropping for a couple of days, or their hunger from like coming in a couple of days. So that helps you along the way. And I did use those to my advantage, but they ask for certain quests, and those are like the more mundane ones. Every once in a while, some cult member would walk up to me and say, I am devoted to you so much. I've given everything except my life. I want you to murder me. And then they'd say like, but you should do it at night so nobody else sees, because it, you can do this, but you can, and I did do this a couple of times because it was early on in the game and I needed the faith in my meter. So I would go to the cult member that asked for it, go wake them up and then kill them while no one else was watching. And the game would say, congratulations, you did it without anyone seeing you. All right. Or after a while, when I got enough people in my cult, they would be up at night and there was no way to hide that from anybody. So I'd either say, okay, I'm not going to do that, and I'd lose faith immediately, or I would try and attempt it and think that no one saw me when someone actually did. Because as long as someone else is awake in your cult, in your camp, they will see you kill that other person. So you have to specifically be sure that nobody has that insomnia trait that makes it so they don't sleep at night. It's so complicated. And I didn't realize it, but that's an example of like the more wacky things that they ask you to do. Did anyone ever walk up to you in your cult and say, I want to pull a prank on somebody?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
And what is that prank?
Yeah, so mine was, so there was a guy who came to me and he said, I really want to eat poop. Like, I really just want to eat poop. And I was like, okay, whatever, I'll make a poop pie or something and give it to you. And he ate it and got incredibly sick. And then later on, same guy came back and he was like, I want someone else to eat poop. And I was like, man, you've got some sort of weird thing with poop. I don't know. I didn't do it. I just took the faith hit. But I was like, you are a strange kind of guy. But
yeah,
it was interesting because I feel like there was a lot of traits on people, but I feel like at the start, I was really like looking at what the trait did, like, oh, is that going to be good for them? That's going to be bad. And by the end of the game, again, you didn't really have to look at them. They were just kind of like, they might do a small hit here or might do a little good thing here, but I didn't really take notice. But yeah, that guy, I don't know if he had some sort of poop trait. I don't think he did, but he really enjoyed poop. But yeah, it's interesting. Did you have what you said? You've got a prank as well.
I got the same ones. Although there was one in particular that said that I should kill one of my other cult members, and I was like,
yes.
No, I'm not going to kill for you, sir.
Yeah, I had the same thing when a guy the little notification came on the screen that said this person has become friends with this person, and I was like, oh, cool, yeah. You know, they're friends. And then a couple of days later, the guy came up to me and asked me to lock his friend up in prison. And I was like, I don't know why, but I did it because I thought maybe he knew something that I didn't. And then the guy was in prison. His friend was out. And then his friend came up to me again and said, oh, I think you should sacrifice him. And I was like, what has this man done? He hasn't done anything. He's been in prison. So I released the friend from prison and sacrificed the other guy because clearly he was just trying to be, I don't know, he was just psychotic. Yeah. But yeah, got him out of the cult.
There is a trait that you can see on some of these members that says that they are troublemakers. And in that case, I watched out for them. And they have everyone in the cult will respond positively to when you praise them or you sort of like do this little dance with them. However, the troublemakers in the cult have a different option in that place. Instead, what you can do is you can either tell them everything's going to be okay, and that increases their loyalty just a little bit, or you can bully them, and that increases their loyalty a lot. And I was like, well, okay, like if that's what increases the loyalty for this jerk here, I'm gonna do it. I don't care. Because I found myself, especially near closer to the end of the game, I found myself being, as far as like my morality goes, I found myself being a real asshole when it came to just like role-playing as this cult member. Normally when I play RPGs and stuff, I tend to swing more toward the good side of things. Mm-hmm. I try not to be evil, but in this particular one, I found myself doing awful things all the time. And like when I would go into dungeons and I would find shops halfway through there, and there'd be like someone that set up like a stand where it was like a clothing stand, or there was also the tree grotto that had this money tree that you could donate money to and it would give you resources. I would often just like anytime I went to any of these places, I would destroy everything in the room and then just gather up all the resources. And it was very funny. I thought to myself, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this terrible stuff, but okay, I'm going for it. And one very funny moment for me in that dungeon, when I got to that money tree room, the first time I did it, I donated 20 gold to this tree and like got some resources back. I was disappointed in that. So I decided to smash all the money bags that were in the room and collect up all the money. And I got like, I don't know, 150 gold out of all of that. So then I said like, okay, cool. You know what? I'll just give 30 gold back. Here you go. And so I donated it again to the tree, and the tree responded saying, this is stolen gold. I'm not giving you anything.
That's awesome.
It's like, yeah, but like how I can't believe they got that intricate with this with that kind of stuff. So like I said like, okay, well, cool, I'm gonna walk away with 120 net gold. Actually, no, yeah, the mathing that out, if I got 150 back and I donated 50, I'm coming out with 100 gold, so that's good. But I thought that was hilarious. And then every time after that, anytime I found that room with the money tree, I ignored donating it and I just smashed everything in the room and walked away with the gold, because I don't need more of those resources. I've got 300 pieces of wood in my camp. I don't care. I'm good. So all this to say, the community builder of this game, was very funny, very hilarious, and surprisingly intricate too.
Mm.
And that especially like comes in with the DLC, which we can get to in a little bit. Around this a little bit. So just a quick story explanation. I threw this note in here, like, we should talk a little bit about the story, because there is a small story that really, for me, it doesn't feel like it really matters, but we could talk about it for a few minutes. You're playing as this lamb that I guess has like been you were killed at some point, and then you've been brought back to life by this ancient god that has been imprisoned in some other dimension. And it is referred to as the One Who Waits. And it was imprisoned by four other bishops, or four other gods of its, possibly its underlings, maybe, or could have been his equals. But this god has asked you to go out into the world and kill the four that imprisoned it. And these are four bishops that lead their own cults. And so that's why you're crusading through each of their dungeons and going after them. Mm-hmm. No surprise though, that after you've killed all of them and you come back to the one that waits, it turns on you and says that it's going to kill you and thanks you for your service. You can submit to it, or you can defy it. And when you defy it, of course, you have to then fight the one that waits as the fifth and final boss. This was like going through this, I was just like, this is so obviously he's going to turn on me, and I'm going to have to fight him at some point. So that's just a quick explanation for the story. Did you find any part of the story like very funny or very interesting?
I think they did quite not a really good job, but it was quite interesting that the four bishops did have quite different personalities, which was interesting. Like, one of them was a complete coward, and he would come up to you at the start of his dungeon and be like, "Do you just want to turn around and not fight me? Like, you don't have to kill me."
Yeah.
And then the other one would come and then tell you that one's a coward and that you should kill them anyway. Like, another one of the bishops would be like, egg you on to go and kill that guy because he's a coward. So it was quite funny with that.
Yeah, I liked the one that would pop up and it would just say, like, "I'm here, I'm waiting, come and get me."
Yeah, they did have some interesting things. Like, each of the bishops had like a thing they would do when they came and visited you at the start of the dungeons. And they were quite annoying. Oh, yeah. Like, one of them would just make people sick at your camp, or it would make people hungry at your camp, which those ones were fine because you'd get back and you could fix it. But
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, the last one, the fourth bishop. You'd go into the dungeon and then he would talk to you, and then one of your followers would appear in front of you and he would turn them so they would start attacking you, and you had to kill them because you were in a room and you couldn't talk to them. You had to fight them.
Yeah.
And then they were dead. You just had to murder them, which was really annoying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And especially because like he popped up and like brought in one of my most loyal followers.
Mm.
And I was like, "God damn it. Like, you were one of my first. No, come on. I don't want to kill you." But thankfully, you do have a ritual in your camp that will let you resurrect somebody.
Yeah.
So there's that, which is it allows you to bring them back, which is helpful. So you don't have to lose them completely.
It was quite annoying, though, because I was making mistakes during that dungeon and had to do it a few times. And the thing where he brought people came up quite a lot, actually. I think one point he brought two people at once.
Yeah.
And I had to kill both of them, which was annoying. And then, the cooldown on the resurrection ritual was too long that I think my numbers went from like 20 plus down to like 14 because people were dying of old age as well. And it was looking really dire towards the end of the game. Like, I was like, how many people am I left with? None of these people are my old people. It was, it was really bad, but we managed to get it done. But
yeah. So that's a quick explanation of the story. However, another part that I thought was very fun was that when you indoctrinate someone into your cult, be it like one of the bosses that you fight, you can then bring them back to your cult and have them be one of the members. Or, you know, you just like indoctrinate anybody that you find in your crusades into your cult. You can choose the way they look, what they wear. You can even rename them. Did you end up like choosing different names for anybody, or did you just use the default, whatever it was?
For the names, I did just give them default. At the start, I was looking at the skins and like what I wanted to make them look like, but then I ended up just making them be themselves. It made it a bit easier to recognize them when they were their own look, and especially with the boss ones, because they actually did resemble the bosses. So I was quite interested to have them as themselves, which I liked. Yeah. Did you name your cult as well? What did you name your cult?
So I tried to think of like, what's the funniest thing to name this cult? And based off of the lamb, instead of calling it the default cult of the lamb, I named it Biology. Did you name your cult?
I did. Mine, because I was like, what do I call it? I need some good luck. Mm-hmm. And so I just called it Cthulhu Guide Us. That's what I called my cult.
Small nod to the Discord. Colin's going to love that.
Yeah. It seemed to work out. I got pretty lucky sometimes. So.
Oh, praise Cthulhu.
Right. Praise Cthulhu.
Also, when it came to naming individual cult members, I didn't change the names at first, just because it was like, okay, well, it doesn't really matter. But after a while, I started to feel like they were kind of just like randomly generated names. And a lot of the time they didn't make sense, because it's not like someone would pop up and it's like, oh, it's Mike or whatever. It would be just like a random order of like letters and like consonants and vowels.
Yeah, and it was like what you'd name demons, like what you'd see demons' names at. It was like Balthazine or whatever random mixture of Z's and X's. And
so I ended up changing names once I figured out how I could. And I started to name all of my cult members after various foods that I liked. So I'd have, one person walking around, pizza. There's pizza here. He goes taco. He's a nice guy. Sprinkles, very cute. When I got an elephant because like all of your cult members are various like chibi forms of animals.
Yeah.
I got one that, was an elephant, and I named him Noodle. I thought he was one of my favorites. Oh, yeah. There was a, let's see, the frog boss that you get, it looks kind of like a meatball. So I named him Meatball. There was like a one that was like a spider that showed up that was very dark, so I named him Brownies. But I tried to make them sort of fit. Like, there was a guy that was really red, so I named him Hot Sauce. it was just like a silly spin to it. But after a while, you'd see like these like 20 different foods listed on the screen, just randomly like floating around each other. And Carrie walks into the room. She's like, so you're naming just like everyone foods you like? Like, that's it? And I'm like, well, yeah, that's sort of fun.
As your followers.
As ice cream and cake start to actually fight in the cult. And it's like, oh, hold on. Got to break up a fight between the two desserts. Hold on.
That's pretty funny. Okay. I mean, when people join your cult, they're like, please, I'll do anything for you. And then you go, I'm going to call you Hot Dog. And you're like, no, I don't want to join anymore.
Yeah.
Did you have issues with performance when you went into any of the menus that had all the cult members? Mine always froze every time.
Oh yeah, it always like felt like it took like 5 seconds to load that menu.
That was really strange. It was just on the ones with the cult members for me. Like, that was the only, if you clicked on a bed or you went to the menu, just on those ones it would freeze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's it's just that it has to pull all that data.
Yeah.
So it's slightly frustrating in that regard, but you know what? It's worth the price to have so much fun with this. So
yeah,
this is the point where I did start to enjoy myself and it's like, okay, well, I see what this is doing, and this is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So like this is something that is a bit more interesting than just a roguelike. And just like a community builder, it meshes those two together and it really knows how to poke fun of itself. So yeah. I loved that.
Yeah, I think also since you named everyone, it makes you a bit more tied to them. So then when something goes wrong with someone that you like, like you're like, oh no, Noodle, what's happened to Noodle?
No, literally. And like then when that one bishop does, like when you're in the dungeon and the bishop like brings somebody in that you really care about, it's like, no, I don't want to kill Cupcake.
God, at least you bought dinner with him. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is that resurrection mechanic that lets you like bring someone back from the dead. But this is probably like using this the first time, nothing happened. And like bringing someone back from the dead was fine. But it was right before I was about to go to bed. And I was like, okay, well, I want to bring this guy back because he was really loyal. And unfortunately, he's dead. You know, died of old age. It seemed like every time I would go into one of these dungeons, someone would die of old age while I was in there. And that was an annoying part where it's like every time, like everyone in my cult was dying of old age.
Yeah, it felt like whenever you went to a dungeon, like time went really fast, even though a day hadn't passed. Like as soon as I went into a dungeon, almost every time it said, this person's gravely ill, or this person's died of old age. Every single time. It was really strange.
That's kind of like, you know, how I imagine like how it feels to be a parent. To just like, you know, feel like you're going out of the house to get stuff and just like so worried. It's like, man, I gotta get back to those kids.
Really, yeah, been gone 4 minutes.
I know they're hungry. I gotta get back.
Yeah. So if it didn't have the clock, it wouldn't be that bad. But you got that clock in the top right corner, and it hasn't moved. Like the needle is still on the same day in the same morning. And I'm like, I was there a second ago. I went out the loan screen. The time hasn't changed, but now two people are gravely ill. This person's died. I was like, what's happened? This person's a spy. It's all bad.
So with the post-release updates, they threw in a lot of updates to this game, a lot more than I could imagine they could do. But starting off, they threw in a lot of accessibility options. One of those being to stop time when you jump into the dungeons.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
I know. Like, I didn't know that until I like started the third one, because I was just like having everyone die in my cult. And I would constantly have to go into the resurrection ritual and bring someone back. I would often like start to have to make choices like, well, I like this guy's attributes, but his loyalty isn't as high as somebody else that I want. So one of the accessibility options that they threw in there in a post-release update was you can stop time when you enter the dungeons. As soon as I saw that, I was like, this is way too annoying. I am totally turning this on. I don't care. So that's one thing that when I turned it on, it felt like the game played a lot more like it should have, where you can go into a dungeon and you don't have to worry about how long you're taking through there. But at the same time doesn't change in the dungeon. So it's not going to be day or night. And those tarot cards that make you powerful during the day or during the night don't apply. So,
right.
That's one thing to remember, but turning that timer off really helped my enjoyment of the game, because then I could focus on one thing or the other and I didn't have to worry about, you know, what was happening in my camp. You know, if suddenly someone like started getting sick, I could just like focus on that. But my original point with getting back to this resurrection thing, after a while, I figured like, okay, well, I want to get the resurrection ritual unlocked. I unlocked it. I resurrected my first person that had died in the camp. And I was like, great, cool. I've got this person back. They're young again and they're walking around the cult. That's great. I was getting ready to go to bed and the timer had come up for that ritual again. So the cooldown was done. And I think like, well, who else am I going to bring back? Somebody else. Bring back another person out of this resurrection ritual. And they come back as a zombie. And now they start to eat my other cult members. Like literally, they're not called a zombie. They're called, they have the cursed attribute. And now if you've got the healing bay, you can send them to the healing bay and cure them of their zombie version of themselves. At the time, I didn't know that. They just come back as a zombie and I laugh uncontrollably as I'm getting ready for bed. So this, as I like put my hand to my face, I'm just thinking like, how am I going to deal with this now? And I decided, okay, well, I don't have the healing bay, but I do now have a prison. So I'm just going to imprison this person until I can at least cure them. The next day comes around. I have enough resources and I build the healing bay and cure them. That's fine. Okay. But in the meantime, they've already eaten two of my other cult members. And I think to myself, do I want to risk having the resurrection ritual again? Yeah, I'll do it. I can do it. And most of the time, or it feels like 50% of the time, you can bring somebody back and it's not an issue. And the other times they come back as either cursed, which is like a zombie, and they start to eat other followers. That's how I lost Crackers, poor guy. Or they come back as catatonic and they don't do any work. They just walk around wide-eyed. And if you check their status, their internal thoughts are, what is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of death? There is no, there is an endless cycle. Nothing is valued. Nothing is limited, or it's all endless. So again, the game pointing fun at itself, and developers really taking the time to throw in something weird and unexpected. Like, you know, the first time the resurrection ritual, not a problem. Nothing bad happens. The second time I get a zombie and I lose two more members to it.
Yeah. I did it three times and all three of mine were perfectly fine. I didn't even know there was options to be bad. This is the first I'm hearing about it. But all three times I did it, it was perfectly fine. No issues at all. So that's amazing.
You can give it a try.
I will.
It's very funny to see.
Yeah, managing numbers was pretty crazy, because the last to go and like see the one who waits, you have to have 20 followers. And yeah. I think at the time I only had like 14. So I had to just run through dungeons, like picking the people up and then escaping and then picking people up and escaping. And there was a spider person outside the dungeons who would sell you people for like 50 coins.
Yeah.
And I just had to keep running through trying to get people while people in my camp were dying. And it was like this up and down, up and down, up and down. Finally managed to get to 20. I think I had like six people who were old, like walking around. I was like, oh, quick, run to the spot before someone dies. Oh, it was stressful.
What's great too is that like when one of those people that die of old age, they just keel over and die. And then anyone that's nearby sees the dead body and immediately gets sick and throws up because they don't like seeing dead bodies. Going back to the post-release updates, they added in more stuff to the game, like a lot of other roguelikes do. And this one adds in more tarot cards for you to find. It adds in relics for you to use, which is another ability that often charges up as you kill other enemies. Mm-hmm. It adds in those accessibility options, including invulnerability, so you can run through dungeons without having to worry about taking damage.
Oh wow, I've just looked them up as well, and there's also one that forced weapon, so you can choose a weapon.
Yeah,
which is great.
You can choose your weapon. On my last couple of runs, I was sick of seeing that dagger show up, So I said, you know what? I just want the axe, and I know that's what I want. I'm taking that. So yeah, you can have a short force weapon to just, you know, run through some of those dungeons if you're trying to do cleanup. They added on a lot. They also added in more fleeces, and they added in a couple of other new vendors to interact with. They also added in another god, a sixth god that you interact with. You don't have to fight him. At least I don't know if you have to yet, because I've still been playing this, like, even up to through the afternoon that before we were recording this, I was still playing it because I just wanted to see what else I could get. They added in an endless mode that is, it's not necessarily like the dungeons that you're going through. It sort of just takes the rooms and shuffles them. So you might be going through a forest area at first, and then the underwater themed rooms next. It also adds a boss rush area to it. So you can just fight bosses one after another and see how far you can make it there. All of these give you new rewards called God Tears, which will then you can take to the sixth god that you get to name yourself, because its original name is just a bunch of question marks. So that one I did name Cthulhu because I couldn't think of anything else.
But, so did I.
Yeah. So I would constantly be taking my God Tears to this guy, and he spins this random wheel that will give you some random additional reward. However, all this stuff that they added to the game increases the number of things that you need to collect and unlock to get the base trophies in the game. So this is where I'm guessing like Fate Prime ran into a big sticking point to platinum this, because there's just more to unlock. There are more tarot cards that you have to find. There's more animal forms that you have to find for your followers. And there are more fleeces that you have to unlock. So there's also this new mechanic that they added to the game called Sin. And it's a third meter for you to build up on your cult. Your cult members now generate this second meter. In addition to the loyalty, they generate the Sin. Then you have to use that Sin to spend on new buildings. You can also spend that Sin on a mating tent and have two cult members mate, and then they produce an egg that you then care for and hatch, which is another new cult member for you to indoctrinate. All these updates feel very natural to the game, but like if you were to just tell me this is the game and they didn't update this beforehand and these all were all built into it, I would believe you.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of good DLC, though, I guess, as well. Like, if the fact that it fits in quite well, it could be a positive thing for people, and it could be a negative thing for people.
And it's all free.
Yeah.
You know, it's all free. You don't have to pay for it. There is DLC to this game that you can buy, which are just other member outfits for you to just dress up as. But as far as, like, new content goes, it's all baked in there. So I don't know if you have a choice of whether or not you can download it, but it's just there, at least in my version. So
yeah,
you're going to have to play through it, but it just adds more content for you to find and unlock. And a lot of these like new things to do, like the relics that are now in the dungeons, just give you another tool to fight against whatever enemies are there.
And like you were saying, with the accessibility features, like you can play the game, like you play the story through maybe without them and experience how it is to juggle both halves of the game, and then after you finish it, I'll probably put some of those on just to make the grind at the end less painful. But I think that's a good thing for me. Like if I have to do a bit of grinding here and there, that's normal for a lot of games, and the fact that their accessibility options that make that easier if you want it, I think that's a pretty good plus.
Yeah. I have to say that, like, this is a really good podcast game, meaning that, like, if I've got a podcast that I want to catch up on and I just want something to play in the background while I'm listening, this is really good. Yeah. For one thing, the music got really annoying after a while. Mm-hmm. So I deliberately turned it off. But just like being able to like walk around your cult and tend to the farms that are there, or tend to the egg that I'm trying to hatch in the nursery, you know, whatever it is, like do the daily sermon and, you know, wait for the resurrection mm-hmm. spell to cool down. Like all of that's really fun. They also, did you get into the other sin mechanic that is thrown into this game?
Which one was that?
So there's the way to generate sin, mm-hmm. and you do it through a couple of different ways. You can build the confessional booth, which mm-hmm. you take confession once a day, and you earn sin from the one person you take confession from. There's the drum circle that will generate sin, and that has like a rhythm mini game that you just have to, you know, press the three buttons in time as they fall down this meter. And then there is a drinkery or a bar that you can build, and that will allow you to craft drinks and then serve them to your cult members. And that will generate a little bit of sin from them, but that also makes them drunk. And occasionally they will fight each other if they're drunk. And that's, I ended up actually having one cult member die because of that. And that generated a lot of sin for one particular member. Yep. And I looked at their status, and the status said like, killed Salsa because he thought it was funny. And it's like, no, that's not funny. As much as I'm laughing now, that was not funny. Like, now I have to go resurrect that character. Like, come on. And also, like I would want to imprison that person, but no, you just like pull the sin out of them, and that's your currency that you can use to build up the chapel, or spend it over in the mating tent, because you need one sin to spend in the mating tent to get an egg. Yeah, it sounds more and more ridiculous.
Yeah, the sin part definitely is crazy.
Yeah. So all of this aside, who do you think should check out Cult of the Lamb if you were to recommend it to somebody?
It's interesting. I think if it's a game, like if you're someone who plays a game and just wants to play it through and finish whatever you're starting fast, I'm not sure this might be the right one. If you're someone who wants to play something quite relaxed, because it, again, none of it's very challenging, I don't think. Like, some of the dungeons are here and there, but the cult part is just very relaxed. I think anyone who likes community building games will get something out of it. It is quite fun for that, and it is quite cute. But I feel like if you're someone who wants either a challenge, like, because a lot of other roguelites are challenging, this one's not very challenging. Yeah. So it's not going to kind of tick that box if you're looking for that. But if you're looking for a game that kind of walks the line between two genres that you like, if you like both those things, I think it's definitely fun to play. I've enjoyed playing it. I don't think it's, you know, my favorite game of all time, whatever, but I think I'm definitely glad I played it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the platinum and get all the trophies because I'm enjoying myself, and it won't feel like a grind because there is quite a lot of different things to do. You know, there's all the mini games. There's even a fishing mini game. It's pretty standard, but mm-hmm. there's also the card game, like the dice mini game.
Yeah.
Knucklebones. So there's a lot of things in there that kind of break up the two different parts. And because it is two games pushed together, you can switch between them whenever you're getting sick of one and the other. So it is quite fun to play. So I think most people would get something out of it. But I think if you're looking for something that's going to challenge you, this isn't the game for you.
Yeah, yeah. Especially because you can turn on those accessibility options and breeze through most of it. you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. The only like really difficult part, I feel like if someone's like wanting to go for trophies and stuff, it's going to be unlocking everything in the game. And it's just, it's a long list that I can't keep track of. And it's difficult to also access that list to see like what animal forms you don't have and what tarot cards you don't have. So that's the difficult part, is just figuring out what you need. Other than that, though, like it's a fun time and it is relaxing, I'll admit, just to like, you know, not have to worry about stuff most of the time. The clock, it can stop ticking when you're in the dungeon, thanks to that option. And if you've got a favorite weapon, you can force that. So like, you know, a couple of times I did force the blunderbuss because I felt like I wanted a ranged weapon that particular time. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, I can just zone out and run through this dungeon again and collect resources, or you like try and accomplish this one quest where now that I've recruited one of the gods into my camp, I'm going to then go through one of the crusaded dungeons and get some resource that he's wanting to me to bring back to him. And that resource is actually a new relic that I needed to unlock something else. So it all builds on itself, which is the mark of a really good game like this, where, you know, you're building up the community and you know, it builds more and more on top of itself and allows you to unlock more. I was talking to a friend who described Stardew Valley as one of the best capitalist games. And like, that's because it allows you to acquire more stuff, and you start to figure out like, oh, if I have this, then I can do that. And then I can get more of this and more of that and more of that. And it's just this amassing of an embarrassment of riches that mimics capitalism. So it's kind of scary in a sense, another very, very worrying thing besides cults. But you know, I also wanted to ask you, like, based off of this game, could you think of other community building games that are very fun and relaxing to play around with?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned Stardew Valley. That one's, I think, the biggest one that comes to people's minds.
Yeah.
I think Fallout Shelter came to mind, where, you know, it's, things can happen. It's kind of like you're managing people, you're managing spaces, you're expanding. It's that kind of similar feeling in terms of juggling. That one, obviously, is just the management, not a cross between. If you're looking at cross betweens, there's Moonlighter, I think it's called. That's like a, on one hand, you own a shop, and on the other hand, you go and do dungeons and find items. So that one kind of does kind of balance between the two, community building and the roguelite aspect. But I think that's the main ones. I'm not sure. Maybe it's Spiritfarer. I think that maybe also is a community building one.
Sort of in a sense, like it's more of a relaxing kind of thing. But yes, you do build your area up and you shelter other people. But Moonlighter is absolutely a great recommendation. I have that on Switch, and that one is almost exactly like Cults of the Lamb, where you go into a randomly generated dungeon, you gather up a bunch of stuff, and then you bring it back to your main area, and instead of building a cult with it, you sell it, and you like run a shop and stock your shop with all the stuff that you collect in the dungeon. But yeah, great shout out for Moonlighter. That one is also on PlayStation Plus Extra. So if you're curious about that, looking for something like Cult of the Lamb, check out Moonlighter. Are there other roguelites that you'd recommend? Moonlighter, great shout out. That's one I'd recommend. Any others you could think of?
Yeah, roguelites is quite a lot, I think. It's a genre I like quite a bit, and I've played quite a lot of them. So Dead Cells is good. That one's a little bit harder in terms of the difficulty, but you do feel that kind of progression going through as you come back and unlock more things. Rogue Legacy 2, that was I really enjoyed that one. That one is similar, where you have a life and then your character will die and then you become like their descendant, but you carry over some of the upgrades into further runs. Hades, everyone knows Hades. That's a good one too. And also West of Dead. Have you heard of that before?
I've heard of it, but don't know
yeah,
much
so
about
basically
it.
Yeah. You're a cowboy who died. You come back. You're the spirit of him, and you have to kind of go through these dungeons and defeat bosses, and you get upgrades and new weapons. And I've recently platinumed that game. I would really recommend that one too. It's quite fun.
Cool.
More about shooting than melee combat.
Yeah. Other one that I could think of is The Binding of Isaac. I recommended it earlier, brought it up earlier. Pretty much if you want to try out a roguelite kind of game that feels a little bit like the first Zelda game, but with a sort of like a twin stick shooter kind of feel to it. You just want one that has an endless amount of content to go through. That's a really good one because they've added so much to that game and it's integrated so well into itself that it's impossible to tell what has been added from what has been in there from the beginning and what's been added later. It's amazing with all the stuff they've added to this game. So check out The Binding of Isaac if you're curious about that and you want an endless kind of game. That one, definitely, I had like a love-hate relationship with, where I'd think to myself so many times, like, I hate this game, and then I'd start another run and feel like I was incredible at the game. So that is also a game that is a great lesson in luck in terms of roguelites, because you could be having one of the best runs in the world, and then you totally get fucked over by just random occurrences in the room. It is out of your control, yep. And there's nothing you could do about it. But
that's right.
That's a great shout out. And again, Moonlighter, probably the closest thing that I can think of as far as like mechanics go to this game. So Cult of the Lamb, good fun. I'm glad you recommended it for the vote for this month. It's a good game to just try out, and not one that I would have gone after. Is there anything else that you're reading, watching, or playing right now that you'd want to recommend?
Yeah, so I'm not really much of a reader or a TV watcher, but there is a game I'm playing, and I've talked about it on all the shows I'm on, but I've just recently got like pretty much to the end of it, and that is Expedition 33, Clear Obscur. Expedition, yep. That game to me is the best game. Maybe the best game I've ever played. I would say it's definitely up there, like top three games of all time for me. So
wow,
okay. I know a lot of people are playing that, but
yeah.
But again, it's based on what you personally like. But for me, that ticks every single box. Mm-hmm. That game is a masterpiece. So,
nice, yeah. Nice. That's one that it's a case of like I know I'm going to play it at some point. I don't know when. And I know I will, I do have like one book recommendation that I just finished reading. I just read Mickey 7, which is the book that the movie Mickey 17 was based off of. And right afterwards, I watched the movie, and just like anything else, I felt like the book was better than the movie. But go ahead, check out Mickey 7 if you're interested in some weird, like kind of introspective sci-fi story. That was really cool. As for a game, next month we are going to be talking about Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. And this one, it hit PlayStation Plus Extra in March, and as soon as that was announced, I was like, okay, when is our next free month? When can we talk about The Lost Crown? So we had to, because of timing, you know, I had a vacation coming up at the time. So it was just difficult to work around, but this July, we're finally going to talk about it. I'm really excited. I love Metroidvanias, and this one supposedly was like up there for Game of the Year, I think in 2023 when it came out. Was it 2024? So, yeah. I'm not sure, but it was highly acclaimed, and a lot of people talked about it, and then a lot of people said that it was not talked about enough. So I'm excited to check it out. Have you tried The Lost Crown?
No, I haven't. I think it released on, I think, January 24, I think is when it came out. But yeah, I'll be playing this alongside the show for sure.
Oh, awesome. Okay, yeah.
Really, really excited.
Yeah. And we had Jordan Vickers on here last month, like to talk about the Goose game. He recommended the Lost Crown as well, so I know he's going to be playing it. I've already got a couple of people lined up as guests, but I'm sure that it will not be hard to find people to talk about the Lost Crown with if those fall through. So I hope you're looking forward to, like anyone listening, I hope you're looking forward to that game coming up. Remember, you can be part of the show by getting involved with our Discord and also subscribing to the Trophy Talk Network on Patreon. You can share your thoughts there about the Lost Crown or recommend any games for future episodes. And you can find out more information about the other shows like the Trophy Talk Network, those being the Trophy Talk Podcast, the MoogleCast, which you are a part of, and Surviving the Horror. You can also subscribe to our Patreon if you want to take part more in these shows, like voting on what our game is going to be for the PlayStation Plus Game Club. And you can also find me on Discord as the Portland Kevin, if that's the way you'd like to contact the show. But Zach, again, thank you for recommending The Cult of the Lamb. I wouldn't have played it without your recommendation.
No worries. Yeah. I'm glad to have the chance to play it. Again, it was one of those games that just kind of, you always see it. It was always popping up. And yeah. I feel like it made a lot of noise when it came to the service. And I feel like I just had never really thought about how it would play or what it would be like. So I'm glad that we had the chance to play it and I enjoyed myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to admit, I wasn't expecting the roguelike nature to it. I thought it was just going to be the community building stuff. So, again, remind us what's happening with the MoogleCast coming up. You guys are talking about Xbox, right?
Yeah, so Max is away for this month, and so it'll be me hosting with Colin from the Trophy Talk podcast, talking about all things Xbox. If anyone wants to get in contact with me, they can find me on the Discord or PlayStation under Zach LRE.
Great. And again, thank you folks for listening. Until then, I hope you have a great day. And to steal a phrase that Max uses over on the MoogleCast, be excellent to each other.